Hi, everybody. It is October 10th, and this is the Fall Nutrition Counseling Roundtable Call, which is basically a pretty informal, unstructured gathering. The overall topic is the counseling process in the nutrition care setting, and I'll give you a little bit of, for those of you who haven't been on the call before, this is not a call where we can get into detail in specific cases or anything, more general issues you're running into, and also it works really well when people share things that are going well, skills they've been practicing, what they've been discovering, things like that. It can also be an opportunity to share resources that you may have run into. excuse me. If you have background noise, I don't really hear any, but if you have any background noise or think that you will in your background, you can mute your phone. And if your phone doesn't have a mute button on it, this system will mute you by doing 4-star. So if you do 4-star, you'd be muted, and then you could do 4-star and come back on. Okay. So we can just launch into this, see what we've got today. What skills have you been experimenting with, or fun things to share, or resources, or struggles? That's always nice if we start out with the positive stuff, though. Who wants to start? We've got about a dozen people, it looks like, on the call, something like that. Who wants to jump in? Oh, it just occurred to me I probably first should get things going by sharing some resources, that upcoming things that are going on that people might be interested in. I did just send out in the email that there's a motivational interviewing conference in New Orleans the end of the month. It's a Monday, an all-day meeting that is occurring before the MI trainers all have their annual get-together. And it's a wonderful opportunity if you're anywhere in the New Orleans area. Bill Miller, the person who originated MI, will be speaking in the morning, and he is not to be missed. He's a wonderful guy. And then in the afternoon, there will be various workshops that you can choose to go to with very experienced MI trainers. So that's one resource. And moving into November, the last day of November and first day of December, I'm doing a 2-day internal family systems for dietitians workshop in Memphis, along with Diana Richards and Jean Campanzaro from the Boston area. And my next counseling intensive, the motivational interviewing 2-day training that I do, I'm holding next in Jacksonville, Florida in January, January 11th and 12th. More details on my site. There's someone who has a lot of background noise on their phone. If they could mute their phone by doing 4-star, that would be great. I think I can tell who it is on this, and if I hear more, I might mute you, but it sounds fine now. By the way, I would love to schedule some more dates and cities in 2019. I'm in negotiations for one in New York, though I don't think I have a location yet. If anybody would like me to come to their city, and particularly if you have a meeting room that holds up to 24 people that you can let me use, you'd be able to come free. So contact me by email if you have that kind of option. And any of you who will be attending the Academy's Food and Nutrition Conference and Expo in D.C. At the end of this month, I will be presenting on Sunday early afternoon with Andrea Lieberstein. She'll be presenting on mindfulness, and I will be doing about 35 minutes or so on internal family systems and how dietitians can use that. And then the Monday, the 22nd, I will be Andre and I will have a table at the member product marketplace in the convention center. Okay, so in order to get this going, somebody needs to jump in and share something, perhaps an MI skill they're working on, or a question or concern.
I can jump in.
Sure. Your name?
My name is Taisia. I am in San Jose. I'm a practicing dietitian, diabetes educator, an outpatient clinic.
Okay.
And I took your training about 4 years ago.
Okay. In San Jose? Yeah.
No, that was in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay. Las Vegas. Yeah.
And I actually ran into Andrea this weekend in an open floor workshop, and she was talking about IFA.
Okay. Yeah, small world, right? Yeah, yeah. I'm curious, you say it was several years ago you came to the workshop, and in all these years later that you've been practicing and working, which MI skill do you find the most helpful?
Reflection and rolling with resistance, because there's a lot of resistance in the office. And so at the same time, they want to change. And so it's like, and this is what I wanted to say. It's like a lot of people come to the office expecting I have a magic wand and I just cure them instantly. And they get disappointed when I don't. And oftentimes what I hear is that, well, I expect that you're going to write me what I'm going to eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner, versus what I do is I listen, do the motivational interview, get the assessment, and then I move into explaining how to do the meal planning based on a plate method, which is very simple. And so many people find it helpful, and then the rest of the people, many people, will say, well, this is basically, it's like, oh, it's work.
Right.
I thought you
Right, and I'm hearing that basically what you're running into is that they want the changed outcome. They aren't terribly clear on the fact that they have to change some behaviors in order to get the different outcome. And that's frustrating both for you and for them. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm curious how you approach that initially, like when you discover that basically they have some misconceptions about whether you have a magic wand or not. What do you do initially?
When I realize that?
Yeah,
this is where I guess I'm struggling, because it's like, and then, you know, the internal dialogue goes, oh, my gosh, I'm failing, and maybe I'm not meeting the expectations of the dietitian, but wait a minute, I'm not supposed to, like, I mean, I'm giving them options. So there's a lot of internal dialogue. Several times I've been just straight saying, well, my role is to guide you and to show you how to make a meal plan so you can get the skills and so you can have this for the rest of your life, because this is not a diet. Mm-hmm. This is a lifestyle.
Right.
And
do you have enough ways of explaining the way you look at the process, basically?
Yeah. And I guess I want to do it in a way that's gentle and supportive versus like, I could be military. I know that. I have that in
there. Yeah, and it's possible to argue with people, right? Yeah. Well, I have a thought about some wording, and you may actually be sort of doing this wording already, because you mentioned using reflections. Let me just suggest a little step-by-step sort of wording and see how this might fit. At the point where you're going, oh, God, this is what I'm dealing with, you know, what I always do first is do some reflecting. It helps me catch my breath, basically. Say, oh, so you were hoping that I would just give you a meal plan that would be easy to follow, and that would be that. Or you word it whatever way you would to sort of reflect what they said, maybe in a slightly simpler way than they said it. And then either wait for them to say something or go ahead and say, you know, I have some thoughts for you about what works best in this situation. Or I have some thoughts about how best to do this based on my experience of working with people in your situation. Are you ready to hear that? You know, in other words, sort of a setup for your, it does sound like the way you give the advice, the information about how you believe the change process works best, you know, it sounds like you're doing that fine. It just strikes me could give a little bit more of a setup first.
I see. And then showing
how does that sound?
It sounds good. And so what I hear is I say the their process or their, you know, process of the counseling session.
Mm-hmm.
And also at the same time I'm giving, and so when I approach it this way, then I give them not the authority, but like I know that I got it and I will be
mm-hmm.
able to guide. Like I got them in their hands. Like, so they're like safe and there's going to be an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be happening in the way that they expect it to, but there will be an outcome
right.
where they're going to learn how to eat and there will be results.
Right, right. And the part you're adding is that you two are a team about this. That it
yeah.
isn't just you who's doing the work. It's them, you and them together. Yeah.
I see. Collaboration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, part of what you may be running into is, of course, some people are so used to medical visits where they just go in and it's a very brief, somebody just tells them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that, you know, there's no counseling as part of it. They're used to that. And so that's what they're assuming. And it indeed, you're right. It's part of our role to sort of educate them about what we can do, but also what we know works best, for people.
Right. And if there's no, like if they don't see the clear structure, they're kind of like, well, what am I getting myself into? It's unclear for them. And so if I have the approach of the way that you suggest, then it's a reassurance to them. No, there's a structure. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That there's a plan here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I interject?
And so, sure. I was about to ask if somebody else wants to interject. Sure. Your name?
A lot of times, I'm Molly Paulson from Atlanta, and I teach at Georgia State University.
Hi.
I have had this happen. I work with the students in counseling patients for part of their rotation in their master's program, and we run into this a lot where the students or faculty want, you know, a prescription diet given to them. And we also will ask them, well, what has worked in the past for them? And when they say they've lost weight previously and that they've been sticking with a stringent plan from a trainer or someone else that's given
mm-hmm.
them a plan or a fad diet and it hasn't worked for them, you can tie that back into why the meal plan is sometimes too rigid and people tend to come off of
mm-hmm.
it. So using it from past experience to help them overcome the ambivalence of having a meal plan.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Draw out of them their experience.
Right. And
yeah.
how sticking to something that's rigid doesn't teach you any behavior changes that are lifelong.
Right.
And having them come up with the realization themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. This is a good reminder.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's tricky because sometimes people will say, oh, yeah, when I had that plan, I did lose weight. It was great. It worked.
Right.
Then you have to follow up a little bit more and say, then what happened?
mm-hmm.
after that, right.
Then I went on
or
vacation.
You have someone who's, yeah. Yeah, right, right. Molly, your situation, you're often dealing with students. They may not have been around the block that many times, and
right.
They may not actually have that information. Who else wants to jump in with ideas on how to deal with people who want a magic wand or want to be told exactly what to do?
Kate from Boston.
Hi, Kate.
It's sort of related, but it's kind of a slightly different piece of that question. So
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious what people's thoughts are on, you know, motivational interviewing techniques specifically, like as it applies to a weight neutral and health at every size approach. That's kind of what I recently joined a private practice where that's really the focus of our practice and what we're really trying to, promote. And it's a philosophy that I feel very strongly about. But I'm finding, you know, that it's really hard to help clients, accept that I really don't know how to help them achieve a very specific weight, right? That I can help
mm-hmm.
them changes and I can help them improve their relationship with food, but ultimately I don't know how to help them achieve.
You can't guarantee something. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. For all the reasons, you know, the research, like 95% of diets, you know, don't work
mm-hmm.
after 2 years. So anyway, so my question is, how do you help people kind of, I guess, let go of weight loss as a really positive outcome of dietary
mm-hmm.
modification?
Right.
What are some techniques that you can use to help people with that?
Well, before anything else, I'll jump in. Do you already have the book, speaking of resources, of Wellness Not Weight? Ellen Belovsky's book? Yes, good. Okay, because that has some ideas in it. Let's see who on the call may have input for Kate about your experience of working with that.
I can say something on that.
Sure.
My name is Michelle.
Uh-huh.
I find inquiring a little bit about what weight loss will do for them sometimes gets at their primary motivation, I suppose, because it's usually not just about an abstract number on a scale. It's often about
mm-hmm.
how somebody can live their life or what kind of experience they can have or think they can have in a certain body. So sometimes digging into, it's not just the number, but what do you think you'll get if you're at this number that can help?
Mm-hmm. Right. How do you imagine your life being? And indeed, as those of us who ask those kind of questions, you get all sorts of different kinds of answers. It's not always the same. Kate, how's that sound?
Yeah, no, that's very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I agree with that, kind of digging a little bit deeper to kind of figure out, you know, where the motivation for the weight loss is coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is really tricky because if what you're doing is essentially you and the client have different goals in mind or different outcomes in a sense, different emphasis, different focus, it can feel like you're arguing with the client, which probably isn't a very good idea.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, you say you're in a practice that really has a very health at every size approach. Do clients know that when they?
Yeah, they do. Our marketing is
okay.
Very. It's clear. It's certainly
yeah.
there are people that come who don't. I think there's a lot of confusion around exactly what that means and what intuitive
reading.
And all of those things. So certainly,
mm-hmm.
They're always is a little bit, or there can be a little bit of confusion.
I totally agree with you. I mean, Kate, I'll have people who I try to screen them on the phone, frankly, because I won't work with someone who just has, you know, just wants to eat to lose weight. And then sometimes third visit, you know, oh, but, you know, this is all great. You know, I feel better about it, but I want to lose weight, you know, it's sort of
right.
Like that pops out again, you know?
Right.
And that's
can
when
I
you
interject?
Do. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Molly Paulson again.
Okay, sure.
Another thing that we try to do with people, because we talk about healthy at every size as well, but to have the person, if they have a number in mind of where they want to be with their weight, we ask them if they, we talk to them about, have you been there before? What did that feel like? Were you able to maintain it comfortably, or was it a struggle for you every day? And, you know, were you not able to enjoy social gatherings and doing things with your friends because you were always so restricted to try to keep that weight level? And just kind of talking through how that feels and, you know, trying to have them see that maybe that's not a healthy place for them to be, and to have the kind of lifestyle that they want.
Right.
Yeah, to talk through that.
And Molly, what you're essentially bringing up is that there are times when we're ending up sitting with someone when it's dawning on them that in order to be at a weight that they think they would like and be happy, they would have to do have a relationship with food that they're not willing to do, basically.
Right.
maybe a very rigid one. And that in order to, you know, be able to have a relatively relaxed relationship with food, it means it's not going to guarantee, and they probably won't be 140 pounds or, you know, whatever it is they think they'd like to be. And that's a pretty uncomfortable realization to come to, and that's why a lot of people just don't. They keep saying, oh, but if I just, you know, if I just found the right diet,
exactly,
I would lose weight. Yeah, and getting the point of acceptance, it's not easy, not comfortable.
Right.
And it's not our job to sort of force them to be there. We can continue to help them be clear about what's true, what the reality is, and what their experience is.
And how they felt when they were there.
Yeah, and how they felt there. And, yeah, I had a client recently. I've been seeing him every other week for a while and then last month. And he had lost a you know, some weight as he was sort of regularizing his relationship with food and whatever, but not nearly as much as he wanted to. And finally, he and I just came to the conclusion, this is it, that sure, he could be more rigid, but he's not willing to do that. And so we said goodbye, and he seemed, at least for the time being, that he was accepting it. You know, that's the way it is. But anyway, these are big issues. Now, Michelle brought up the question, what will you imagine the weight loss will do for you? I'm trying to think of other things that sort of get at this. Oh, one thing that I'll often ask, I never know where it'll go, and sometimes it's helpful and sometimes it isn't, but I'll say, if you had to make a choice, not that you do, but if you had to make a choice between having a comfortable relationship with food and the process of eating or being at the 100 and whatever, you know, 40 pounds, which would be more important in the long run for you, for your life?
That's a good question.
It's a tough question for people, and often they sort of can't answer it. And I point out to them, we're not necessarily saying it's a black and white sort of choice like that, but it somehow is helpful for people to think of it that way.
This is Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. And just another thing that I've used when trying to get at the, you know, the deep down reason why they want to lose weight, you know, going back to that time where they were that weight if they had a specific number, and we talk a little bit about the things they did at that time that they really enjoyed, and if they're not doing those things anymore, why aren't they doing it? Because it's almost always a barrier that's not weight-related, but sometimes they think it is. So sometimes it's interesting to discover, oh, well, what can we do to bring that back into your life that isn't about your weight?
Right, where they wouldn't necessarily have to wait until they've lost the weight. Yeah, and a lot of people aren't aware that what they're doing is waiting.
Yes.
To have their life. Yeah. and you know, there may be occasionally some actual obstacles to doing the activities that they did before.
Yes, amusement park rides is one that I've heard.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, if you don't fit in the ride, you don't fit in the ride. So that is a genuine weight-related barrier to going on the ride.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually had a client say that. And then she looked at me. She gave me a funny look, and she said, you know what? I don't really like those rides anyway. It's just that my grandkids like them. So, but some people do like them, and that's real. But anyway. Yeah. Any other thoughts for Kate, and how are we doing, Kate?
These are all very great suggestions, very helpful.
Yeah. And it's not simple, is it?
No, this is a really, this is a tough topic.
Yes, it is.
Because of the culture that we live in, and so many reasons I could go on and on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a tough one for sure. And it's, and I understand why it's so tough. It's really, really hard to kind of help people to see kind of beyond weight as the ultimate, or weight loss, I should say, as the ultimate goal.
Right. Yeah, and also, you know, to sort of add another thing that comes up often with similar sorts of clients is the, I don't know what to call it, but it's the stuff that I sort of think of as sneaking into people's heads from the culture about certain foods being bad, like carbs are bad and things like that. And I'm amazed how many people don't realize that that has snuck in to their head. I'm curious how many of the rest of you have noticed that, particularly the carbs are bad issue.
Oh, so many of my clients believe this. I was just, I just had a session right before the call where my client agreed to do a one-week experiment where she ate carbs twice a day to find out what would happen because the fear is so intense.
And what happened? Or hasn't she come back yet?
I guess I'll find out in a week.
Okay.
She already worked on permission, and she was keeping more carbs around the house, which was helpful, and she noticed she had, you know, internal limits with them. But she still had a lot of fear, this idea that if she were to permit herself to eat them every day or twice a day, that something would go off the rails, even though realistically it never has. So she agreed to the experiment to find out what would happen, and we'll see.
So you say realistically it never has. So you're saying this is someone who doesn't struggle with binging or...
No, I would say, yeah, based on her behaviors and her the issues she's told me about, she sounds like somebody who's more of a rigid, controlled eater. And so she's done this experiment with other behaviors with her therapist in the past. I piggybacked on her therapist technique and figured we could try the food. And
it's definitely exposure therapy, exposure to carbs. Right. And
exactly.
Nothing horrible happens. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, and of course, as we know, our clients really vary one to another. I mean, there are people who have had an experience of binging in the past, and so there is a bit of truth to the worry that if they have cookies in the house, you know, that classic kind of thing, that they will eat the whole bag all at once. and it makes sense for us to bring that out and at least acknowledge that that fear is there. That's not the same thing as cookies are bad, however. that's how we respond to them. So I'm aware we've been doing a lot of talking about sort of the health at every size and clients' expectations of magic wand and things like that. What other either fun things to share or questions or concerns do people have?
This is Sarah again. I had something.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes I don't want to use the word fail, but I do not motivationally interview the way I intended to. And, you know, in the moment when I notice if I see them shut down or if I notice it, I don't feel like I have a particularly hard time, you know, either apologizing or redirecting mm-hmm. or just sort of getting us back. But I had a situation right. recently where I didn't realize till after the fact that I'd done something like that. Mm. And I'm wondering if it makes sense in our next session to bring that up or to just pretend it never happened.
Oh, what a good question, Sarah.
You know, in this particular case, I sort of jumped in with a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And she was absolutely not interested in that suggestion. And if I had, you know, approached it the way I like to, I would have realized mm-hmm. that and not made it.
Right.
And I didn't really yeah. realize, for some reason, I didn't notice in the moment. And then I was like, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the first thing to do, Sarah, is to forgive yourself. We all do that kind of thing. We get so enthusiastic, don't we, about our ideas?
Yes.
Of course. Of course. That part of you went ahead and did that. Now, this is an ongoing client, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. First, what is your thought about that when you imagine her coming in?
I guess in this case, this is a client that I think it might depend on the client. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. true, but I think it might depend on mm-hmm. the client. And in this particular case, she is really good at hiding things from me, and she's a little bit manipulative, so reading her is hard.
Yeah.
So in this particular case, I don't know, but if I'm trying to think more generally, I think I still don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would depend on the client.
Yeah.
I'll say some things, this is sort of from the therapist part of me, and see whether any of this fits. If it's a client, I'm assuming in all these cases it would be a client you have an ongoing relationship with, because they are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a client you have any kind of clue that they struggle with sort of trusting people, and really getting a good connection, and maybe struggle also with saying to you when they have a reaction or didn't like your idea or whatever. If you have any sense of any of those things, it's going to work best if you slow down and indeed back up and be willing to acknowledge that you got off track a little bit, or you realize that she may not have, or you forgot to ask permission, or she didn't like your idea, or something like that. If, on the other hand, it's a client that tends to roll with things much better and, you know, very out front tends to say, you know, oh, that's fine, and, you know, and you really believe them, that they, you know, they're resilient, if you will. Then it would be up to you. You could make a mention of it at the beginning if you felt like it was a big enough deal last time or not.
Okay.
You know, I think it's not a big deal. If it's a client, though, from a therapist's point of view, we call it someone who has a lot of attachment injuries. That's the person that it makes sense to slow down and do the apology with. Not that you're expected to assess that. Your gut may tell you, though.
Yeah, and that's, I rely on my gut a lot, and it's really hard with this particular client. But I feel like I might bring it up.
It would probably be a good idea to bring it up.
Do you think there's any downside? Like, am I going to undo something? Like, she knows, I don't know. Am I going to undo something that we've developed if I bring this up? I feel like probably not.
I wouldn't think so, especially if you simply take it on yourself, as opposed to saying, I noticed you didn't like my idea.
Oh,
you know,
that's a good
just
point.
Own up. Right, own up. I feel like I got us off track.
Okay.
Or,
that's great.
You know, I realize I get a little carried away with my idea and didn't, you know, give you permission to say you didn't like it. Or, you know, just own up to your part of it and then see what happens.
That sounds great. Okay, thank you.
Right. Okay, sure.
Thanks.
We're getting into specifics here. What else about motivational interviewing? The specific skills. Somebody mentioned, it was asked back at the beginning about rolling with resistance. Any concerns about that? Mm-hmm. Hello?
This is Jean. Hi, this is Jean. And
hi, Jean.
Question. Hi. It was a few years ago I took your course, and I'm glad for the refresher. So this week I had a client I need some help on, like, I guess, pulling in the conversation again to the topic, because I felt like I was watching, like, the conversation was a ping pong match with the client on both sides of the table. Like, cause she was just very, very
happy.
She
was arguing two sides of something?
No, not really arguing, but just all over the place. You know, like a crazy ping pong game where you're just going to play the ball if it falls on the floor or if it's off the wall. Or, you know, she was just kind of going from one topic to another.
Saying all over the place, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's more like it. And I could not kind of keep up even with how I was going to reflect. It just seemed like
Bet others have run into this issue before. I did write a tip on, I think I called it staying on topic. Does that sound like in a moment I'll see if I can find that tip. I think it was even in the first book. So if you went to my workshop, you have a copy of that. Let me quickly see if I can look it up, though. The issue of staying on topic is now it also depends whether it's a first-time client. Was this a first-time client?
A first-time client, and it's WIC, so I have like 15 minutes.
You don't have much time, yeah.
To develop this little rapport and get her through pregnancy, and she just was very, very fast, you know, a talker.
So in this situation, you don't know if this is something she does all the time or whether it's just now. And in any case, you don't have much time. Let me toss out some ideas. By the way, it's tip number 15, which is in the first book. If anybody on the call doesn't happen to have tip number 15, you could email me and I could send it to you. Or you could buy volume one of the practice workbook. Some of the thoughts are, this is where in MI we call it focusing, right? Part of our job is helping this client focus on something. And that's really hard when they just their energy is going all over the place. I'll share with you one way that I do it. Sometimes I'll get my energy up to almost their level and say, wow, boy, you have a lot going on. Or you have a lot of questions, or whatever would be the appropriate reflection. And then I take a deep breath and go, wow, well, let's see. We got 10 minutes here. if there were just one or two things I could help you with, what would they be? That tends to focus people. Now, some people you have to do that with several times because they can ricochet in all over the place again. Jean, what does that sound like?
That sounds like I needed that reminder.
Okay. Yeah. First, a way to gather them together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go on. I was just going to say, I haven't had someone with that particular energy for a long time. You know, and so normally I just were okay. And by the time I finished, I just was like, my head was spinning.
Yeah. And I frankly believe it's okay, Jean, to say at some point, wow, my head's sort of spinning here. And say it with a smile on your face, of course. You know, boy, you have a lot going on. I'll bet you do. And, gosh, all we have is 10 minutes or, you know, whatever it is. I'd love if there were a few specific things that you could come away with today would be another way of saying it. Does anybody else have focusing type questions or strategies they use?
This is Molly Paulson. Just very similar to that, just stating to them, you know, that we're taking a breath and saying, you know, I'm here to help you with your nutrition goals, and is there one or two things that we can focus on? I'd love you to leave here with, you know, something that I've helped you with and you feel better about towards your goal.
Yeah. I'd love you for you to get something out of it. Yeah. And sometimes these people catch us off guard. Jean, particularly, I mean, you see people you've never seen before, one after another. You know,
and we're supposed to do a certain amount of referral, so sometimes it's easy to get caught up into you need to help them with everything. Now, I didn't feel that way. You know, I just kind of went through this. I can give you, point you in the right direction for this and this and this, but I really did need to just rein it in to my area of nutrition. And that's what, you know, I wanted to leave her with. So that's a good reminder. Thank you all for that.
Sure, yeah. We all run into that at times. So I forgot to mention to you guys that I do need to end the call about 5 minutes before the hour because I do have a client coming in at that point. So we have a little more time, so what else?
I have kind of a recurring issue that's come up a couple of times in the last couple of months. And I'd be curious what you or anyone has to say. I have some clients who are working more long-term on their relationship with food, and then they will sort of they will be kind of dazzled by some sort of a diet, a very specific diet. Sometimes it's presented as like an anti-inflammation, not a weight loss, but a very restrictive anti-inflammation diet or something similar to that, and they choose to pursue it not necessarily for weight loss reasons, or they don't think it's for weight loss reasons, but it really is very different to the work that they were doing around food overall. I just kind of have rolled with it and said, well, you know, I don't try to argue them out of it or whatever, but I feel kind of helpless at the same time, and I'm not sure if there's a better way to respond.
Yeah. I'm assuming you're not the only one who's run into that kind of thing, because I certainly have too. I have to say, I love your wording. They get dazzled by a diet or a way of eating or something. I'm presuming that already you work to suggest that they work that way of eating or diet or whatever into what they're doing now, as opposed to throwing the baby out with bathwater and not paying attention anymore to the whatever they're doing, the noticing the appetite scale, intuitive eating, you know, whatever else it is, not throw that out the window And also I'm imagining, are there also times where the diet or whatever that they bring up, you get very concerned about or feel that it's really a fad diet or something like that? Does that happen too?
Well, I'm skeptical. I mean, I'm skeptical of most diets that sound fad like, but I feel like it's also important to acknowledge that different things work for different people. And sometimes someone really does just take to some kind of a plan. And I'm not against it. If it's adding more to their life than it takes away, or if it doesn't completely decimate their relationship with food, then I'm okay with that. But I get concerned that maybe they struggle to incorporate both things at the same time, even though that would be my, you know, what I would encourage them to do.
Do you say all of that to them? Because it strikes me quite appropriate for you to essentially say all that.
I do, yeah. I say, you know, I'm not a big believer in diets, but I also know that sometimes people just really, something works really well for them, and there are, you know, maybe 1 or 2% of people who find something like that. It won't necessarily produce long-term weight loss, but if it makes you happy, then that's okay with me.
Right, or
so that's kind of what you've been doing.
Yeah, or makes your GI system feel better or whatever, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it strikes me you're probably doing what it makes sense to do already. You're continuing to encourage them to notice what happens, which of course is what you do all the time in working with your relationship with food, noticing what their thoughts are and noticing their appetite level and the fullness and all that stuff. So this would just be a continuation. So, suggest they notice what it's like, what thoughts come up when they're in the supermarket shopping or when they're choosing their food or when they're, just ask them to keep an open mind about it all. And that you're willing to go over it with them afterwards. See how it fits.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And also you could say, one of the things you and I could do is we could sort of make a list of things you want to observe, like data you want to collect. I don't, some clients like scientific language, some don't, but, like you might prompt them to observe, what happens with their appetite, what happens with the part of them that enjoys food or feels deprived. I don't know, just generate, brainstorm with them what they'd want to observe when they're following this way of eating. And then when they come back, you go for it with them. Yeah.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah. Also, if you happen to have volume 3 of my practice workbook, tip number 81, actually, I combined several tips on that. It's on addressing myths and stupid diets and things like that in an MI manner. Because occasionally when people bring these things in, we really do have some input for them about how it might not be a good idea or something. So that tip may be helpful. It gives you sort of a format to follow. And the main part of it is asking permission to provide the information you have about that diet or what you don't have, what you don't know, what you're just skeptical about. And then asking for their feedback. So, okay, lots of cool topics today. I think we have time for one more, if anybody has any. Okay, well, let me ask if anybody on the call is coming to Fancy in D.C. at the end of the month. What was that? I heard maybe that was in the background. nobody's coming to Fancy? If you know anyone who is, tell them to check me out in the member marketplace on Monday. I have a booth there with Andrea Neuberstein. So, okie dokie. Well, this has been fun. Sorry I have to cut it off a little early. And I will send out the recording for those who were not able to be on the call, and hopefully come up with another date sometime in the winter to do this again. And I'm glad it sounds like a bunch of people called in who have been to my workshop before. Any of you who have not been before, you're, of course, welcome to sign up and join me. And those of you who have been to the workshop before, I'm getting more and more people coming back for the second time, and they seem to value it. So, okay. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.